Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning appointment with the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. Doctor, good morning. Hopefully we are past the worst of COVID, but in recent times, it has actually peaked in the summer, hasn't it?
It has. Excuse me, it has, Bob. It's peaked in the late summer. So this isn't a virus that follows a seasonal kind of rotation. It really kind of peaks when it has a new outbreak or it has a new variant that comes out. And for the past two summers, it's been in the summer. It hasn't been in this fall influenza-like season. So we're kind of a little anxious to see what happens as we enter the summer here and see if we see another bump.
What's going on in other countries with COVID and the booster shots?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we're all sitting here waiting, and the FDA and CDC have been very silent on boosters. And yet around the world, we're starting to see people start to have another booster. We all know that actually what we've seen is that after 6 months, we start to see those antibodies wane. So we're all going, wait a second, I'm at 6 months. I'm at 8 months since my last booster. Is it time? The federal government CDC and FDA have kind of held on right now, saying, let's wait, whereas the UK and Canada are saying, no, 6 months, if you have underlying illness, if you're over 75, we want you to get boosted. So certainly we're kind of a little hesitant to say, why are we not making this move right now? And it's interesting, in the UK, 85% of those over the age of 75 have gotten their boosters. Where here in the United States, we're closer to 50%. So it would make even more sense for us, it appears, that we should be promoting a booster at this time as well.
So if the worst of COVID in the past has been in summertime, do you think that we need boosters prior to the fall every year? Is that what you'd like to see?
Well, I'd like to see what happens this year, because if we can get to a time where we just need one shot a year instead of two shots a year, to be able to couple that with the flu shot will make our compliance rates skyrocket. If we need people to go in to get a COVID shot in August and then in October to go get an influenza shot, we are going to see confusion and we're going to see decreased compliance and we'll see increases in those infections. So certainly this is going to be a big summer to see, wait a second, was it triggered just because of the variant, or was it triggered because of seasonal issues? And really, it doesn't appear that there isn't any seasonal issues. Influenza, we know, does well during the winter because it's kind of got a hard coating around it that is not affected by cold, where a lot of other viruses really love to flourish in the heat. So this will be an interesting summer, and we're so early in it, it's kind of interesting that they're not going to push another booster prior to that.
What about long COVID? What are the numbers now on that?
Well, that's the interesting thing as well. People have followed this. You know, when we saw a lot of long COVID cases, a lot of it was brain-related, whether you lost your taste or smell, you know, and taste, whether it was heart-related, whether it was lung-related. And what we have seen that as it transitioned from the original COVID to the Omicron variant, the number of cases of long COVID has gone down. Now, that theoretically does make sense, right? We know right now that BA4, BA5 are more of an upper respiratory, so they're not getting into the lungs, causing people to go on ventilators and have bad pneumonias. We're not seeing the loss of taste and smell in Omicron. So it appears that what happened is the virus has mutated to a point where it's going to be not as virulent, but more able to spread. And when that happens, it's not getting into these tissues that cause the long COVID. So we've seen a decrease in long COVID, especially in those who are somewhat healthy. We're still seeing some patients with long COVID, obviously, but there has been a significant decrease, and we're finding it more again in those immunocompromised, overweight, diabetes, and heart disease.
Mm-hmm. And so if someone has had COVID and basically no symptoms or very mild symptoms, they're not likely to have long COVID problems, are they?
No. No, and we're still trying to figure out exactly why does long COVID happen. Is long COVID happen because we've done damage to the cells and we need those to be repaired to come back to normal? Is long COVID there because there's this simmering virus that is still staying there? It's very similar to what we would see with chickenpox causing shingles down the road. But it certainly appears that the areas where we see long COVID, the virus really has to get into the body and cause a lot of illness prior. So these are individuals who are hospitalized often, that were on ventilators, and that had bigger, major cases of COVID than those of us who have now had this where you can take Paxlovid and it's almost a bad influenza case versus, boy, we're talking about you going into the hospital and having big problems.
The doctor is in, Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Kevin Most. Let's talk about the results of this study on the treatment of long COVID, doctor. Quite a few people were studied here, weren't they?
Yeah, Bob, we looked at about over 1,000 people. And really, what this is, the interesting thing about this study was that we started treating these patients initially as soon as they got COVID. So we got two results out of this. One, what was the impact on COVID itself? And two, what was the impact of preventing long COVID? And we probably all remember early on in COVID, we had a lot of, I shouldn't say crazy thoughts, but we had a lot of unusual thoughts of different medications that could potentially help. And one of them was a medicine called ivermectin, which is a parasite drug that we use for lice and some other things. But that was one, and it was highly touted in social media. So it was really good that this study was done to show a couple things. One, that ivermectin didn't work. The probably more interesting is that a drug called metformin, which is a diabetes drug, actually did help to decrease the protection against having any cases of long COVID, and pretty substantial.
And men, women, what was the age group here? What do we know about the people in this study?
Yeah. Actually, you know, we took people from the age of 30 to 85, and women actually did much better than men. And those, if you're overweight, you did worse. So what they did is we took individuals and we took them into, put them into one of four piles. You either got ivermectin, you got Fluvox, which is a OCD medication that can be used for the treatment of depression. You got metformin, which can be used for the treatment of diabetes, or you got placebo. Now, the interesting thing about metformin, we're finding more and more about it, it's actually a very interesting drug, that it also is a strong anti-inflammatory. So when we're looking at this study and saying, why did metformin work so well? Probably not because of its diabetes effect of how it moderates sugar, glucose in the body, but probably more importantly, its strong anti-inflammatory report, you know, results that it does. So it was actually very, very interesting study, and will continue to go on.
Mm-hmm. And if you're vaccinated, you have less of a chance of long COVID, don't you?
Absolutely. People that were vaccinated in this study, they had a 50% decrease in having long COVID. And it's, you know, this was a veteran study, so they did look at more men than women, but the women that they looked at did very, very well. So it's interesting that we're looking at, you know, a drug that we wouldn't normally consider using for COVID or for long COVID, and yet we're finding more and more about it. I think what's more important is this one really debunked that ivermectin works, so people should not be using ivermectin. It does not work in COVID, and this was done in a scientific study, not on Facebook or Instagram.
And all the news, all the research, the numbers on Paxlovid is still all good, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. You know, people that took Paxlovid decreased incidence of long COVID, actually, you know, shortened the duration. It is going to become probably the drug of choice for COVID going forward for a long time, we hope. The interesting thing and the thing of concern is going to be what's going to happen when the EUA comes off, you know, in the middle of May or early May here. The government has certainly purchased a lot of doses of Paxlovid, as they have, you know, doses of the vaccine. But once that EUA comes off, now the companies are going to be back to charging, whether you're charging you as the patient or your insurance company or Medicare or Medicaid, because the free treatments will all be gone as we deplete through the supply that the federal government has purchased for us.
Before I let you go this morning, I want to ask you about this study about Alzheimer's, and the first signs might appear in your eyes. What do we make of this study?
Yeah, this is a fascinating study, and it's sad, Bobo. You know, all the times that we've talked, I've talked on WGN, we rarely talk about the eye, but the eye is so amazing. If you really think about your eyes, you know, you have receptors in the back of your eyes that make this electronic signal that sends it to the brain that tells you what you are looking at. And it's just fascinating when we think of that. And if you go to the doctor's office and he comes, you know, he's examining you and he gets really close to you and he's looking in your eye, you're probably thinking, what is he doing? But it's amazing how we can look in the back of the eye and see any changes from high blood pressure. We can see changes from diabetes. And now it appears that we may be in the future be able to check for changes in Alzheimer's. Individuals who have the clear, you've probably heard of clear TSA, you know, that is where they go and they do a retinal scan. You've probably heard of people with retinal scans.
Sure.
So what this study was looking at is it took a bunch of people, took 86 people with Alzheimer's who had passed away and had donated their tissue to science, and they looked to see what is going on in the eye and what is going on in the brain. And in the eye, they actually found an increase in the beta amyloid, which is a key marker of Alzheimer's, right? We know that in the brain. Well, now they see that in the eye as well. They also found a decrease in something called microglial cells. Now, microglial cells are kind of our repairman. They're our handyman. They go and they repair damaged tissues, but they also clear extra beta amyloid. And then they found inflammatory markers. So it's interesting as we look at this, is it we make too much production of beta amyloid? That's what we thought in the brain. Is it that we don't have enough repair cells to clear beta amyloid through the microglial cells? Or is it decreasing inflammation? So it's interesting that eventually we may be able to do an eye scan and see people who have early signs of Alzheimer's, because we know this disease starts decades before we see any symptoms. So again, this all this research and individuals who are donating money to Alzheimer's research, we appreciate that, because really we're starting to look at early diagnosis and treatment, and we're still at the tip of the iceberg for this one.
Yeah, the eyes more than a window to the soul, huh?
It really is, you know, and people that have high blood pressure, people that have diabetes, we look in the back of the eye and we're looking for changes there. So, you know, when you have that, if you have diabetes, I'm sure you go to the eye doctor and he sits you down and he puts your chin on this and he kind of comes at you with a microscope. He is looking at the back of your eye to look for any minor changes or major changes to say, hey, your diabetes is a little out of control. We need to do this, because we also have other things that go on in our eyes as we age that really impact us. So eye health, we talk about heart health and lung health, but eye health is very important as well. So hopefully people are getting in to see their ophthalmologist and having them check the back of their eye, check for pressures for glaucoma to make sure that the eye pressure is not doing damage to our vision. Look for glaucoma. Look for retinal detachments. Look for all the things that we need to make sure that we can continue to have great vision, because that impacts us physically as well as socially, and is really important.
Don't put that eye doctor appointment off. Dr. Kevin Most, until next Monday morning, thank you very much.
You got it, Bob. We'll talk soon.